Free Radical by Seamus Young, as read by Paul Spooner.
Chapter 28. Reformat. Rebecca drew close to the end of the concourse. The shooting had stopped behind her, and now she could hear only frightened yelling. Overhead, a display screen changed from the view of the now empty waiting area to a single word. Rebecca. She stopped short. In the distance, there was a shriek of pain. The image changed. Go right. Her mouth went dry. She became suddenly aware of the dozens of electronic eyes that must be watching her from every direction. She went right into a large room filled with benches and GlobalNet kiosks. There was an elevator on the right and an escalator to her left. Most of the power seemed to be out. The escalator was off, and the lights were out. With no windows nearby, the room was quite dark. She jabbed the elevator button, but nothing happened. The nearby display was black. It was dead. She turned and headed for the escalator. As she approached it, it came to life, ready to carry her down. The stairs themselves were almost pitch dark, with a small pool of natural light showing at the bottom. She stepped on and rode down. At the base of the escalator was a small room that led to the baggage claim area. The remains of three TRIOP security guards were stacked in one corner. Spent shell casings littered the floor. The room smelled like a firing range, and a haze of smoke filled the room. Humid air flowed in through the shattered window, which was the only source of light in the room. She looked in horror at the bodies and stepped carefully past them into the baggage claim area. The lights were off here as well, but two large windows provided enough illumination to see where she was going. On top of the smell of gunfire, there was a strong smell of burning rubber. Black tire tracks crisscrossed the floor. A man was pinned against the wall by a luggage bot. She immediately recognized him from his outline. It was the director. Everything below his ribcage was trapped between the hard block wall and the heavy, thick chassis of the bot. She was alarmed to see that the bot was only a few centimeters away from the wall. Unless his implant gave him the ability to survive with most of his lower torso squeezed to the thickness of a few magazines, he was already dead. As she approached, she could see that his skin was stone white and his eyes were wide open in an eternal stare. His mouth hung open with a look of utter surprise. In his right hand, he still held his sidearm. A display screen flickered to life in a dark corner of the room. It's for you. Suddenly, a phone began to ring. She looked around quickly, but didn't see the obvious public phones hanging around. It rang again, and she realized the sound was coming from the director. She approached him slowly, and the phone rang again. The memory of his speed and his strength were fresh in her mind. She didn't want to come within arm's reach, dead or not. It rang again. She stood as far away as she could, and with one hand slowly pulled open his jacket. The bottom of the jacket was trapped in the mess between the bot and the wall, but she was able to pull it off to one side. Reluctantly, she reached in with her other hand and drew the phone from his breast pocket. She jumped away from the body and hit the answer button in time to cut off another. The moment she connected, an unmistakable voice spoke. "You need to get out of here. I don't want to have to kill any more of them." "Are you okay, hacker?" His voice was quick, urgent. "Don't worry about me. They're looking for you. Well, both of us, really. But you're the one in danger. Take off your jacket." Beside her, the baggage machine began running, producing a steady supply of incoming luggage from the depths of the airport.
"What?"
"The uniform you're wearing makes you stand out. Right now they're looking for a woman in her early 30s in a TRIOP uniform with brown hair. Sound like anyone you know?"
"Early 30s? Give me some credit, you bastards!"
She stripped off the jacket. She was still wearing the pants, but they looked like any pair of black pants. On top, she was now wearing a plain white undershirt. The moment she brought the phone back to her ear, he spoke again. "Now, grab one of those bags and get out of here. Don't come back the way you came." She nodded and grabbed a suitcase at random from the moving conveyor. She followed the signs directing her out into the main concourse and broke into a light jog. Movement wasn't smooth, with a phone in one hand and a heavy suitcase in another. She neared a corner, and he broke in again. "Walk here. Don't run. You're just another passenger, following the evacuation." As she rounded the corner, she could see the way was guarded by three TRIOP security personnel. They had moved away from the end of the hall and were now yelling at someone in the crowd. She reached the end of the hall. She could see that they were involved in a dispute with some police officers who had drawn their weapons on the TRIOP forces. The round, dark body of a peace sentry lay nearby, its red and blue lights flashing. Its loudspeaker proclaimed that it had detected unauthorized weapons. One of the triop guys was screaming over the din of moving civilians and the blaring of the peace sentry that they did in fact have full permission to be armed in this area. A police officer was screaming back that they didn't care what permission they thought they had, and they needed to disarm right now. The fight was escalating quickly, and she walked out behind the security forces, without so much as a glance in her direction. She joined the flow of the crowd as they headed for the exit. She opened her mouth to speak, but he cut her off. There is a car on the way now. It should be there by the time you reach the main entrance.
Where are you?
She asked. There was a strange laugh on the other end. That question is a bit abstract for me right now, but I suppose you mean where is my body physically?
Yeah,
she replied.
That's what I'm asking.
He sounded so strange. It was clearly him, but he spoke differently. He spoke clearly, and with less attitude. His dictation was clean and free of the sloppy slacker accent he always seemed to have.
Well, I'm safe. That's good enough for now. Where can I meet you?
That would not be wise right now, he responded. That would be putting all our eggs in one basket, wouldn't it?
What the hell are you talking about?
He spoke calmly and evenly. At least one of us must make it out of here alive.
What? How about I come find you when we both get out of here alive?
No, I'm busy for the time being. I have the entire security network of this station working to protect me. I should be safe for quite a while. But I need you to get away, just in case. She was silent for several moments. Her eyes swept over the crowd around her. She looked like any one of them, carrying some awkward luggage with a phone pressed to her ear, having an unpleasant conversation.
So what happens now?
She said at last.
I need you to get out. I need you to tell your side of the story. Tell people the truth about what happened, the truth about Shodan, Triop, and Kaufman. You found out about Kaufman?
Yeah, I'm just catching up on the news now. That's the worst part.
I can't believe they've killed Kaufman. You probably won't understand, but they meant a lot to each other.
Who?
Kaufman and Shodan.
You're right, I don't understand. It's too late to fix it, but I want everyone to know what happened. What Diego did, what Triop did, and what I did.
The crowd was hitting the bottleneck at the doors. She dropped the suitcase and began elbowing her way through.
Hacker, I don't think you realize how big this is. The Triop PR machine is a titan. Kaufman tried to fight it, and look what happened to him. One voice is just no match for them.
You won't be a lone voice. Right now I'm uploading a bulk of data into GlobalNet for the world to see. I have hours and hours of video logs, reports, orders. Everything you need to corroborate your story, and then some. The world will see this. They'll know what happened up there. You need to tell them what happened down here.
The reason for the bottleneck was clear. People were rushing out of the airport and then coming to a dead stop in front. None of them had anywhere to go. A line of reserved cars waited for a lucky few, but for everyone else there were a dozen or so taxis to serve hundreds. She was carried through the doors by the crowd. Outside it was a different world. The sun shone brightly, and a cool breeze washed over her.
Hacker sighed. Well, you're beyond my cameras now. I can't protect you anymore from here. My upload's about to finish, and then I'm going to disconnect.
How can I find you? There was another laugh.
You can't. But don't worry. I'll be watching.
She made a face.
It might surprise you to hear this, but that's not very comforting. What happens to you now? You've got your implant. I guess you're just going to go pursue a life of hacking with impunity?
Rebecca saw a reserved car waiting in line, with Lansing projected onto the rear window. She headed for it.
I admit I wanted that for a long time, but I have new priorities now.
Oh?
I want to find some place safe. Get an efficient high-speed connection to GlobalNet. Go do some exploring.
Exploring?
GlobalNet is big. It's a world of knowledge out there. I want to discover new things.
She stopped.
What happened to you up there?
Good luck, he said, before disconnecting. She stood there, looking down at the phone for a minute or so. She didn't want to carry around the director's phone, but she didn't want to cut off her only means of contact with Hacker either. After some deliberation, she decided she could probably contact her anytime he wanted to, phone or not. She dropped it and crushed it under her heel. She stood at the door of her car for a moment, took one last look at the madness around her. People were fighting over taxis, fighting with security, fighting with each other. Those that didn't have anyone to fight with nearby were on the phone, fighting with someone far away. Beside the entrance was a small area allotted to a few trees. It wasn't much, but it was good to see the color green outside next to the context of... But it was good to see the color green again outside the context of a computer screen. She drew in a deep breath and smiled. It was good to be outside, to taste some fresh air. It was good to be alive and safe. As she took one last look at the scene, she noticed a lone man walking away from the airport. He was dressed in an ill-fitting business suit, but heading away from the concrete stairs that led to the underground service entrance, he was thin and pale, and walked with a pronounced limp. The top of his head was covered in short stubble. He carried a suitcase in his left hand, while his right arm hung limp at his side. She opened her mouth to call out to him, but decided not to. He entered one of the reserved cars and pulled away into traffic. Rebecca entered the waiting car and told the driver to head out. She didn't know where she was going yet, but she wanted to get away from the airport. She rolled down her window as they eased out into the traffic and smiled into the sunshine. "Drop me off in front of the Triopdome building," she said at last. "I have a story to tell." And that is the end. So, thank you for joining me for this live reading of Free Radical. I read it to my wife the whole time. Well, I can always just edit it out. That's the great thing. I can just be like, and then I'll just edit it out.
Good.
You should. I did do quite a bit of editing on this, actually.
Yes.
All the parts where everything. I sneezed
you,
and...
You do quite a bit of editing everything.
Yeah.
Obnoxious.
So anyway, I hope you enjoyed the reading. I enjoyed this book a great deal, and it has a lot of really great ideas about artificial intelligence and
it's Gladys.
It's Gladys and Shodan and what's the other crazy computer AI thing?
This is the dorky one they put in Portal 2. Is not based off of Shodan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Wheatley or something. Mm. So what did you think?
I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. It was well done. And it did kind of... There were parts where it was like, wow, this is totally a video game. It was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of this stuff in here reminds me of fledgling ideas. Or maybe I got them from this, because I read this before fledgling had really taken a definite shape.
Oh, the whole AI thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of AI stuff. All the nesting and the geometrical kind of simplified forms and abstraction and all the link listing and the link database and all that kind of stuff. Memories and learning. There's a lot of really... really great stuff in here.
So Shodan's in his head.
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
I have an AI in my head.
Yes, you do.
At some point, Seamus made a comment about how he envisioned Deck after the book.
Mm-hmm. Worn out and skinny and incredibly undone.
Okay, so here is something. This is the only other bit of information that I've really found. The only other solid piece. And Seamus made a comment buried in this thread on 20 Sided Tale. It's article 15173, titled Free Radical, Free Thread. And in there, Seamus has got a comment. I'll just read it here. Someone had asked him, let's see. Actually, it was in response to my comment. Maybe that's why I remembered it. Okay, so I made a comment saying that I could totally imagine Free Radical 2. And so then Chambers responded, I actually considered making a spin-off book about some other group of cyberpunks that takes place in nominally the same world. Warning, reading further will mess with your perception of what happened next from the end of Free Radical. In that story, Deck wasn't going to be the main character. Instead, he was an oracle, like Mr. Universe in Serenity or the Oracle in The Matrix. See, I saw Deck as being a little broken after the merge. He had the knowledge, efficiency, security drives needling him all the time, turning him into an info junkie. He lives in a warehouse containing a chain-link Faraday cage and is guarded by robots. He's paranoid, secretive, careful with his time, and endlessly curious. The limited throughput of the interface on his hand is always a problem for him. He constantly has an in-head internet activity that's taken its toll on his nerves and his right arm. His arm is paralyzed, atrophied, and the skin is blotchy and unhealthy, so it's lucky that the doc put the interface on his right hand and not his dominant one. He spends the day in the dentist chair on a swivel arm, which he controls through the interface. He prefers to talk through a computer-generated voice over his PA system, since it sounds a lot more impressive than his own raspy voice. The bots prepare his food and dress him. He's never realized it, but he's absorbed in the hacking or surfing in his head. His eyes sometimes flit around the room by reflex, and they make him look like a crazy person. The heroes come to him for help with a local problem, and he reveals that they're missing the big picture. It is a great big problem, but nobody can see it yet. He puts them on their path to their adventure. The problem with the book was that I didn't have anything for these characters to do. There were a few archetypes and personality quirks and nothing more, and in the end I realized I was trying to construct a book around a single scene. I wanted the deck as an oracle scene, and was trying to make a book to support it. And that's kind of a backwards way to write a book, so I abandoned the idea. I actually feel a lot better, having written the above. So that's his speculative what happened next thing. But who knows, maybe I'll write Free Radical too.